Good evening. This is Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here at Global Patriot Network, where you can find us every day at blogtalkradio.com. Kind of in flux right now. We don't have full-time shows for Tuesday, Thursday, so we're kind of working on those. But, hey, every Monday, Vito Esposito comes in. The Vito Esposito Show with Big Al, Mama Mia, No Sharia. That goes at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Well, Tuesdays, like I said, in flux. Wednesdays, me, Hank Jones with Hank Jones Poly Sports, where politics and sports collide, 6 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday. Thursdays, when I go, and I'm not going tomorrow, but when I do, it's Hankerings, a one-hour version of a Hank Jones Poly Sports with more of a slimmed down, more of a one or two issue focus that I'll go with. Usually in the early afternoon with those. Friday's Vito's coming in with Take No Prisoners, part of Conservative Casual Friday. Saturday nights, 10 p.m. to midnight, Minister Usama Dak, Truth About Islam. And then Sundays, I thought it was Eric, but I think that's also in a bit of a flux right now. He's got some stuff going on, so I think he's not doing shows right now, but I'm not sure. But check in anytime. Just look at Global Patriot Radio on Blog Talk Radio, and it gives you a schedule, tells you when we're going. Plus, we tweet it out. I did not tweet it out today for several reasons. One, the show's kind of going quick. I've got to pick up my wife from the airport. It's been a busy 4th of July weekend. Paddled a couple times when I wasn't expecting to paddle. Then got there and got rained out or lightninged out and all kinds of stuff. So it happens. It's fun, but it happens. So anyway, I just had a few things. I didn't want to really – wanted to take the time to just sort of decompress over the weekend. Wife was out of town, gave me a chance to just sort of lay around and not have projects but think about projects. I've got one I'm working on. I'm trying to figure out a way to do a roof or a top for my new paddleboard rack that we built together. I mean, I did a lot of the work, more of the work, but she did a lot. So what the heck. Anyway. To check in with us anytime when you're not listening in, go over to Twitter at HPolySports is where you can find me. You can find Al at GPatriot Radio. And I believe Vito is at Mama Mia No Sharia. Other good ones, Sue from New Mexico, I think it's Love America 615. Holger's on there. Samuel 51, I believe. A lot of good people to follow over there. Good Patriot community. Tsunami. And it's NYRL. Gosh, I forgot how. You pull them up that way, and you don't know their actual handle, but you'll find us. Go over there, find one of us. You'll end up finding all of us. I'm hanging out in the official Hank Jones Poly Sports Space Force Observation Outpost with my little Aussie. She is right here, laying right next to me. She's been fed. She's just chilling. Had a couple of minor storms today. She doesn't like it. We're getting over fireworks and. So this poor gal has just got to get some rest, which is good because little Aussies are normally really hyper and whatnot. So, she needs the rest. Today's first internet laughy, speaking of fireworks, comes from the Babylon Bee. I had to look at it. Spooked by fireworks, Biden pees on carpet and hides in woods behind house. You can see that happening. That's the thing. You can see that happening with him. I mean, that's just how bad it is. And then the second one is also from the Bee. Godless Commie does do sparklers on 4th of July. They nail it, don't they? Last week's losses that I deem significant in the world of obits. Last Wednesday, we lost Canadian sex educator Ruth Johansson at age 93. May not remember her or know her. She used to have this show on late night cable, people with some weird ideas about stuff in the bedroom. My wife and I actually used to watch it as it was pure comedy at times, not for advice or anything. Let's just say that visually she didn't look the part, like Dr. Ruth didn't look the part. On the other hand, she did seem pretty darn normal, and she didn't appear fazed by some of the near grotesque stuff she was dealing with. Now, last Thursday, we lost singer and actress and one-time girlfriend of Elvis Presley, Anita Wood, to pneumonia at age 85. Here's the weird part, at least for me. Elvis would only be 88 this year. That would be eight. Hell, he looks close to 88 in the months before he died. We also lost American broadcaster and voice actor Don Kennedy at age 93. He was one of the voices on Space Ghost Coast to Coast. And then most sadly, last Thursday, we lost Oscar-winning actor Alan Arkin to heart failure at age 88. His Oscar-winning role in Little Miss Sunshine was absolute brilliance. As an actor, his delivery, his ability to go from manic to eccentric to almost meek and cowering was amazing. His scene with Peter Falk in The In-Laws, there's a scene in there, and they're in a shootout, and they're trying to get some of the agents back. And Peter Falk's going, serpentine shell, serpentine. So Arkin brings the guy to safely, and then Falk yells out again, serpentine shell, because he'd forgotten to go serpentine when he grabbed it. So he gets up and goes out and does a quick little serpentine in the field of fire. It was absolute beyond hilarious, despite its subtlety. Welcome, Duck Northwest Media, to the chat room. As I said, I did not tweet this out or anything, but it did. If you do get the emails for following the show, you did get it. But I did not send out my tweets. I did not do all my texting and all that stuff because I wanted to keep it low-key and quick. But I'm glad that Duck is here, a good listener, a good patriot. We don't have enough of those. Friday, we lost former NFLer and WWE wrestler Darren Drozdoff. Now, he was originally, when he came in, he was dubbed as Puke. When he was playing pro ball, he actually hurled on the ball before the center could snap it. It was during a Monday Night Football game, actually. And he later said he was being treated by a psychiatrist for a vomiting problem. He started out as sort of a third member of the Legion of Doom, a.k.a. the Road Warriors. And then he was later injured during a failed power bomb in a match with D'Lo Brown. Now, he never blamed D'Lo Brown. He said it was an accident. It could have happened in any match. But the accident did leave him quadriplegic. He eventually did regain the use of his arms and upper body, but required wheelchair and assistance the rest of his life. He was just 54. Sad. Saturday, we lost former network meteorologist Frank Field at the age of 100. He worked at all the major network TV stations in New York City, as well as helping out occasionally on the Today Show. And Sunday, we lost multi-instrumentalist Mo Foster to cancer at age 88, or 78, I'm sorry. Some of his best work was with Jeff Beck, who you all know I'm kind of crazy about. He worked on Jeff's incredible 1980 album, There and Back, as one of them. And then Dignity took a further hit yesterday with the July 4th Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest. Yes, Joey Chestnut retained his title, but only after a rain delay. Seriously, a hot dog eating contest having a rain delay. What the hell? Move it inside. A rain delay for a hot dog eating contest. That's beyond stupidity and idiocy. A friggin' rain delay for a hot dog eating contest. Good God. I've heard it all. Let's get to the news and notes. Let's just say that the white stuff found in the West Wing of the White House wasn't anthrax. It wasn't powdered sugar. It wasn't Comet. It wasn't Ajax. It was cocaine. Gee, I wonder how it got there. Good God. Here's an actual story. I mean, even the conservative ones, I've been reading from the American Briefing, but even now, they are like, you know, they kind of, cocaine found in the West Wing of Joe Biden's White House. The public doesn't have access to the West Wing unless by invitation. So how did the white powdery substance get there that set off all of Secret Service's alarms? Wasn't Hunter Biden just in the West Wing with his dad before heading out for a vacay? Did he bring drugs into the White House, circumventing the rules just as he circumvents and dances around the laws? Update from the Daily Wire. A white powdery substance that was discovered in the West Wing of the White House on Sunday night has been confirmed to be cocaine, according to officials. ABC News reported that a spokesman for the U.S. Secret Service confirmed on Wednesday that the substance, which initial tests indicated was cocaine, has been confirmed to be the illicit drug after additional testing was concluded. Why the additional testing? Come on. In the original story on Newsmax, a white powder was found in the White House's West Wing on Sunday, prompting an emergency hazardous material call to the Washington, D.C. Fire Department, a U.S. Secret Service source told Newsmax. The substance is now in a lab for further analysis, but it is believed to be cocaine, a source told White House correspondent James Rosen. Reports had indicated the substance was believed to be cocaine, hydrochloride, a hazardous material that is often used as a local anesthetic. God. When reached for an official comment, the U.S. Secret Service declined. The Secret Service does not comment on an ongoing investigation, an email to Newsmax read. And then at the bottom it says, this is a developing story. There's not much of a story here, folks. I like it. Sometimes used as a local anesthetic. It's often used as a local. When is cocaine used as a local anesthetic? Please tell me when cocaine is used as a local anesthetic. Shit. Cocaine is not used as a... It was years and years ago. It has not been used as a local anesthetic. God. I love that. They try to pass it off. It's like, why don't they just come clean? I mean, how stupid do they think? Even the stupidest Americans can read this one like the back of their hand. God. The shooter in Monday's incident in Philadelphia has been identified, and his support as a certain group has at least been noted. And again, also from American Brief, American Liberty. BLM supporter ID'd as suspect in Philadelphia mass shooting. Authorities have named Kimbrady Watson Carricker as their prime suspect Monday night's mass shooting in southwest Philadelphia that left 5 people dead and 2 injured. The suspect wanted in connection with a shooting in southwest Philadelphia on Monday night has been identified as 40-year-old Kimbrady Watson Carricker. According to the Philadelphia Inquirer, Carricker was arrested on Monday evening after allegedly shooting and killing 5 people and injuring 2 children in the King's Guessing neighborhood. Yeah, arrested him without further incident. His Facebook posts, BLM, also follows BLM's Philadelphia chapter on Facebook. Here's one post. Black Lives Matter today. There will be jobs available. Equal opportunity, finally. Just tell us where you're quitting so we can send someone over, Carricker commented on the social media platform in response to a story about thousands of workers going on strike in support of racial equality. Isn't that ironic? The deceased victims in Monday shooting range from 15 to 59. A 2-year-old and 13-year-old boy suffered multiple gunshot wounds. Both are expected to survive. Tina Rosette, 49, lived with Carricker briefly, calling him, quote, intelligent, unquote, and, quote, creative, unquote. However, she added that he could be aggressive and taught children how to fight without teaching nonviolent alternatives. Rosette's 24-year-old daughter, Chiani, told the Philadelphia Inquirer that Carricker showed her a handgun multiple times and that he could be easy to anger. What is it your hero said? If you see something, say something. Good God. I mean, he showed your daughter a handgun and he could be quick to anger, but you just let it go. God. Welcome Joseph Gibson to the chat room as well. Guys, yeah, so it's a BLM supporter that shot up Philly. And then this one, from American Liberty. Some of this stuff you can't make up, and it's impossible to actually believe it, that it's not humor. Ben and Jerry's Independence Day message calls for returning, quote, stolen indigenous land, unquote. Now, okay, we've heard about all this, how like in during COVID, Seattle kindergarten, when they were on, you know, doing online, they'd start their days by acknowledging they're here on stolen land. I get that. That's not new. I first heard of the concept actually in Seattle. I was out visiting our daughter one year and walked by, just happened to walk by a bank, and it said, it was a Sunday, but I was looking at the sign just to see what it said. I somehow knew it was going to be something twisted. It said closed October, whatever, for Indigenous Peoples Day. Columbus Day. It's only been Columbus Day for how many years? But no, Indigenous Peoples Day. So anyway, it says, perhaps hoping to emulate Bud Light's unprecedented drop in market value, Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream posted anti-American propaganda just in time for the 4th of July. On Independence Day, the woke ice cream company tweeted that the United States must return stolen indigenous land. Would this include the land on which you make your overpriced ice cream? A message on the company's website echoed a similar sentiment, arguing that displays of patriotism distracted from the truth of our nation's founding. It was a no-holds-barred approach, not even sparing the legacies of George Washington and Abraham Lincoln, as the New York Post explains. Ben and Jerry's proposed to, quote, start with Mount Rushmore, writing, what is the meaning of Independence Day for those whose land this country stole, those who were murdered and forced with brutal violence onto reservations, those who were pushed from their holy places and denied their freedom? Why would you ask that, Ben or Jerry? None of those people are alive. Haven't been for the most part for centuries. The faces on Mount Rushmore are the faces of men who actively worked to destroy indigenous cultures and ways of life, to deny indigenous people their basic rights. I'll tell you this, the next time my wife walks in the door with some of that crap, you know, I'm not going to make an open display. I'm going to do it better, more subtle. I'm just going to put that shit out on her chair, out on our porch. Because right now in Florida, it's a zillion degrees every day. So I'm just going to take that shit and put it, no more Ben and Jerry's in our house. I occasionally get it because I like some of the flavors, but not anymore. Said the remarks drew significant backlash, even on Twitter, where the average user is younger and more likely to identify as liberal than the general public. Among the critics is country singer John Rich, who has been an outspoken figure in the wake of the Bud Light drama. Taking to Twitter Tuesday, Rich wrote, make at Ben and Jerry's Bud Light again. Yeah, they actually tweeted it. They actually did. Other Twitter users went quick to criticize the American company, whose state-of-the-art Vermont factory is situated atop lands claimed by the Missisquoi Abenaki tribe. The Babylon Bee, of course, tweeted out, Ben and Jerry's unveils new Antifa-inspired flavors. It's called Blood of the People You Disagree With. Another one, Vegan Coconut Milkshake with Bits of Concrete. Oh, my God. The Babylon Bee is so good and so fast with that stuff. But I love that. Blood of People You Disagree With. Ashley St. Clair. I think, isn't she a porn star or something? Maybe not. It just sounds like a porn star name. Says, you stole the milk from cows to make your ice cream. Checkmate. Then she says, fun fact, Ben and Jerry's dropped Happy Cows from their packaging and marketing because lawsuits claim those cows were indeed not happy. Oh, God. Dr. Jordan B. Peterson said, looks like someone is looking for a at Budweiser moment. God, does it get any dumber? I mean, somebody is going to be accountable for this, obviously. But the hypocrisy, I mean, these guys, oh, God. When does it end with some of these people? Jesus. I'm serious. It doesn't end at some point. It's got to. Stolen indigenous land. Good God, people. It's been hundreds of years. It's been hundreds of years. There's not a soul alive who was kicked off that land or who sold that land or who lost it in some kind of skirmish. Not a soul alive. Not a one. Not a zero. In fact, you guys weren't even around then. Oh, I'm sure their parents were like hush puppy wearing, or not hush, desert boot wearing, friggin' ponytailed college professor. I teach comp lit at the local community college where I'm not wearing a tweed jacket and smoking a pipe and talking to people in this fake accent in local pubs. God. I mean, I would understand it if they went to Congress and said, hey, maybe there's, you know, or whatever, something serious, but friggin' virtue signaling about something so stupid. When in fact you were probably born and bred by elitists who, I mean, good God, how do they do it? I mean, somebody at Ben & Jerry's or somebody at their social media unit or whatever is going to have non-dairy egg on their face. I just don't get it. I really don't. I wish I could say I understood or I could see their point of view or that everybody has their say. They don't. This is idiotic. People, this is idiotic. They should have nothing to say. If someone is that stupid, I'm not talking about freedom of speech or the. I'm saying when somebody's that stupid and says stuff that is that stupid, shut them up. We have to. We can't listen to it anymore. I mean, I'm starting to wonder, like, if I'm turning on, you know, like streaming, and I want to watch some comedy show, you know, like a comedy bit, whether it's like a Ron White or whoever. They're competing with this now. It's not fair to comedians. Comedians don't have the social media budget that these guys have. Ain't fair. They're horning in on the business of real comedians. Now, of course, there is no election fraud, despite Lindsey Graham's constant claims about it and then appearing at a Trump rally. By the way, he got his ass booed off the stage, thank God. But no, there's no election fraud, even in Maryland. Except, according to this from the Epoch Times, Maryland Republican Dan Cox says someone committed fraud by filing election paperwork in his name. Former state delegate says he has referred the matter to the FEC. So former Maryland gubernatorial candidate Dan Cox on July 3rd said that someone had falsely filed paperwork in his name to run for his state's 6th congressional district. He said, I have not filed. Reported to this matter to the FEC for fraud. He wrote that on Twitter. He says, I have made no such filing, and Valerie and I have made no decision yet. Apparently, a far-left new delegate from Montgomery County has issued a press release that I filed, and apparently media says someone has filed my name. I did not do so and intend to take action to find out who did. Currently, that district is represented by third-term Representative David Trone, Democrat, of Maryland. May Trone announced in May that he would be vacating the seat to run for Senator Ben Cardin's retirement. Cox, a former state delegate, received the endorsement of President Trump in 2022 in his bid for the governorship. Although he defeated the more moderate Kelly Schultz in the primary, he was ultimately routed by the state's current Democrat Governor Wes Moore. Prior to running, Cox sought Maryland's 8th congressional district seat. After winning the primary, he lost that race to Democrat Jamie Raskin. During the COVID-19 pandemic, Cox was a vocal critic of former Republican Governor Larry Hogan's policies, which included mask mandates and stay-at-home orders. In the state's General Assembly, he introduced articles of impeachment against Hogan, but they were ultimately rejected by members of his own party. Although he did not challenge the results of the 2022 election, Cox asked the U.S. Supreme Court in January to reverse an emergency state court order issued prior to the election that suspended parts of Maryland's election law forbidding the early counting of mail-in ballots. The court order, Cox held, violated the Elections Clause of the U.S. Constitution in allowing ballots to be opened more than a month prior to Election Day. Was the only elected official who saw an issue with what the Board of Elections was doing, his attorney, Ed Hartman, told the Epoch Times. It is important to him that the branches of government comply with their constitutional duties and that elections throughout Maryland are fair and legal. Supreme Court rejected Cox's challenge, however, provided no explanation as to why. Democrat Joe Vogel, an other American Maryland state delegate, announced his bid for the seat in May via Twitter. We need a new generation of leaders in Washington who understand exactly what's at stake in this moment. Vogel goes on, we just can't wait to end gun violence, secure our rights, protect our democracy, and save our planet. Join me in the fight for our future. I am tired. I am sick and tired of this save our democracy. We are not a democracy. We were formed as a constitutional representative republic. We are not a democracy. Now, I know from a practical standpoint, with the 17th Amendment and the Senate, which violated states' rights by making Senate seats up for general election rather than chosen by state legislatures, well, that turned us into, a bicameral democracy, in a sense. Absolutely, John Loftad, he's right. But no, we were not founded as a democracy. The word democracy does not appear in our Constitution. Vito talked about that the other day. I know, it's just mind-boggling. A judge in Oregon, in an Oregon case, has delivered a rather nice victory to Project Veritas. Now, Project Veritas, that's James O'Keefe, the guy that has gotten tons of stuff from on Planned Parenthood, amongst others. Ban on recording without consent is unconstitutional, U.S. court rules. An Oregon law that forbids recording in public runs afoul of the U.S. Constitution's First Amendment, a U.S. court has ruled. Oregon law, first enacted in 1955 and subsequently broadened to bar secret recording of conversations, is unconstitutional, said Judge Sandra Ikuda, a George W. Bush nominee, or appointee, writing for the majority in a 2-1 ruling by the Ninth Circuit panel. Exceptions to the prohibition include recordings at public meetings, such as city council hearings, while a felony that endangers human life is being committed, and by law enforcement officers while performing their jobs. The law is content-based because certain groups, such as the law enforcement officers, are treated differently from others, Judge Ikuda said. That means it has to be narrowly tailored and serve a compelling government interest or survive a test known as strict scrutiny. Oregon doesn't have a compelling interest in protecting people's privacy in public places, the majority ruled. Even if it did, the law is not tailored narrowly enough because Oregon has other laws that cover privacy concerns, such as one allowing tort lawsuits by people who are recorded without consent. The law, quote, burdens more protected speech than is necessary to achieve its stated interest, the judge wrote. The judge also said that the law regulates people's speech to protect people's privacy, but that many people in public places don't seek privacy. Instead of acknowledging that point, the law treats all speech in public the same. People talk in public places. The privacy of other individuals is only implicated if the speech is unwanted, but the law does not incorporate that point, the majority said. They use the example of protesters who may want their conversations recorded in the hopes it will lead to publicity for their cause. Ms. Ikuda was joined by Judge Carlos Bay, another Bush appointee. Judge Morgan Christen, an Obama appointee, wrote in her dissent that the law should be upheld because Oregon, quote, has a significant interest in preventing the secret recording of private conversations, even when those conversations occur in public or semi-public locations. Fucking hypocrite, sorry. Because they're the first people that sign warrants for NSA and others to do that kind of crap. She said that law is also tailored narrowly tailored to serve that interest. Yeah, sure it is. Oregon is one of only five states that have laws in place banning recording in public places without consent. The others are Alaska, Kentucky, Massachusetts, and Montana. Many other states explicitly allow recording in public without consent, and five states have no laws in place regarding the matter. Earlier ruling, the new ruling overturns a previous decision by a lower court. Journalism group Project Veritas challenged the law in 2020, arguing that it could result in undercover reporters being criminally charged. People have refused to talk in the past when being told they were being recorded, the group said, meaning the law prevented reporters from exercising their First Amendment rights. Project Veritas said it would, if not for the law, carry out investigations in Oregon, including probing allegations concerning the state's public records advocate and the spike in violence in Portland. Oregon officials had argued that the law is allowed under the Constitution because it's balanced and content neutral. Okay, here's another one, folks. They'll say something is balanced and content neutral. Or they'll say it's a neutral body. You know, we always hear that well, it's a neutral agency. Really? Really going to try and sell that one? One, laws like this usually aren't equally applied. Look at our past president. He's having the book thrown at him every chance a local or regional or district court gets, whether it be a federal agency or whatever, while others have committed crimes that approach treason, and it's being blown under the rug. Not swept, blown under the rug. It's just it's amazing that there are judges or government officials that still say shit like neutral, unbiased. Bullshit. Stop with that. I mean, I don't even care if you tell me. I mean, it's like, that's why one thing I like about Twitter is like, you know, a Rob Reiner gets on there. He's a complete jackwagon. But it's his right to do it, and you know where he's coming from. He doesn't hide and say, wouldn't it be great if we supported Trump, and then turn around and, you know, fake it. You know, he doesn't do that. You know where he's coming from. You know where I'm coming from on Twitter. I don't get on there and start spouting off that we need to protect the left because they have a lot to say. No, I call out what's called out. I call out Republicans or fake conservatives or rhinos, whatever. I also have to admit, I don't go around recording people, but that's probably a lack of skill more than anything else. Okay, only in America and only in the GOP from America News Nation. Good God. Former GOP congressman now working with Hunter Biden's lawyers. Denver Riggleman, a former Republican representative from Virginia, is now reportedly assisting Hunter Biden's legal counsel as the president's son comes under increased scrutiny for his money and the information found on his laptop. Riggleman is aiding Biden's attorneys by examining the data found on Biden's laptop as they deal with congressional inquiries into Biden's behavior. Riggleman also worked as a technical advisor to the House Select Committee that looked into the January 6th Capitol hack. You know what? These people that have done this should be in jail. Not the January 6th participants. Now, I'm not saying there's no January 6th participants that were wrong. You know, no, of course not. But many, one, were either dragged or pushed in there by a mob, you know, by the traffic, the swell of people. But Capitol Police moved the barricades, opened the doors, and let people in. In his book, The Breach, Riggleman, a 53-year-old former intelligence officer in the Air Force, an outspoken opponent of President Donald Trump, argues that far-right extremism and conspiracy theories pose a danger to American democracies. There's that word again! Damn it. Intelligence officer in the Air Force? and he's helping the Bidens. Yeah, we don't have a shit show going on. Kevin Morris, Biden's attorney and confidant, described Riggleman as, quote, an invaluable resource, unquote, and acknowledged that Riggleman has been working with their legal team since late 2022. We have come a long way in unraveling the vast amount of corruption and misinformation that this narrative contains. That came out wrong. The massive amount of corruption? Misinformation? Yeah, there's been a mass amount of corruption, and guess where the misinformation came from? A lot of our intelligence community. Morris's remarks make reference to Riggleman's cooperation with different allegations relating to the information discovered on Hunter Biden's laptop, which was allegedly abandoned in a Delaware computer repair shop in 2019. Not allegedly. Riggleman has spent months doing a digital forensic study on the laptop to see whether any of the material contained there, such as text messages, has been altered or falsified, according to those familiar with his work in the case who spoke to CBS. Really? Why is he so concerned with that? What the actual hell? Seriously, this guy makes the leap from far-right conspiracy ruining the country to defending a kid and his corrupt family. Effing ridiculous. I hope this guy doesn't still have security clearance. I fear he does, but... former New Hampshire Governor Judd Gregg, He went on MSDNC, and he was rather outspoken after Supreme Court shot down Dopey Joe's student debt cancellation plan. And I'll get to more of it in a second, but let's get to what Judd Gregg basically said. He criticized him this week after the courts concluded 6-3 that Biden's attempt to unilaterally cancel federally funded student loans via the HEROES Act was unlawful. Gregg appeared on an episode of Monday's Squawk Box. Oh, it was CNBC, sorry. 40 million people get $20,000, he said. I'll vote for you to give me $20,000, and that's what it's about. That's what it's still about. That's why they're trying to reform it, so they can keep this idea that they're going to give this huge tax break, this income, to all these folks going into the next election. It was the biggest vote-buying scheme ever undertaken by a presidency. This was an attempt to spend almost $500 billion and added they clearly violated Article 1 of the Constitution. It said if the Congress wants to give away $20,000 per person to 40 million people and put the rest of the country at risk and increase the debt, and they have the right to do that. But you can't do it from the executive branch because the executive branch doesn't have that right under the Constitution. And this is just power politics trying to buy votes. It's that simple. It ought to be called out for what it was. Unfortunately, Dopey Joe and the Department of Education aren't giving up, from the Patriot Journal. Days after SCOTUS kills Biden's big plan, shocking report claims it can be resurrected. Sneaky people always have their next trick waiting up their sleeve. President Joe Biden is as slick as they get. He tried to force working class citizens to pay the bills for the elitists in this country. The Supreme Court shut down his plan, and major media outlets called the deal lawlessness. But apparently Joe is as sneaky as he is corrupt. And again, remember, it's not just Dopey Joe. It's really Barack, we know that, or Michelle, Big Mike. Right away, Joe put in play another plan to force workers in America to pay for the education of the elitist crowd. It's just another way for Joe to deliver on his campaign promise that was designed to get more votes. From the Daily Caller, the Biden administration is planning to use a generous income-driven repayment plan as its main method of easing student loan debt following the Supreme Court's Friday ruling that blocked the administration's plan to grant student loan forgiveness to nearly 40 million Americans. Under the DOE's repayment plans, borrowers who miss payments within the first year, beginning October 1st, will not be penalized, reported to credit or collection agencies, or put in default. Dopey proved throughout the legal process to fight his actions that he doesn't care what the law says. He'll do whatever he wants to get more votes. As far back as October, when a judge ruled his debt forgiveness plan unconstitutional, Biden thumbed his nose at the ruling. Department of Education went ahead with signing up debtors with a forgiveness plan, according to the Daily Caller. Supreme Court last week struck down Biden's debt relief and made it clear that the president does not have the power of the pen to override the rule of law. Biden made clear his contempt for the high court and believes his power is supreme. The new path is legally sound, President Joe Biden said at a Friday press conference. It's going to take longer, but in my view, it's the best path that remains for providing as many borrowers as possible. How long it takes isn't what matters. What matters is that the president, under the law, can't just erase debt for a select group of people that he is wooing for the next election. Biden's first attempt would have cost taxpayers more than $400 billion. His new plan is even worse, according to reports. The department's revamped income-driven repayment plans are estimated to cost taxpayers more than one-time outright forgiveness, according to Penn Wharton Budget Model Report. Biden has publicly shared what he thinks of the Supreme Court. When asked last week if the high court is rogue, he didn't disagree and called the court not normal. Then he thumbed his nose at the justices with his latest vote-getting student debt relief scheme. Biden made it clear with this latest executive overreach that if he doesn't get things his way the first time, he will make it worse on his opponents after the fact. This latest plan is nothing but his way of undermining the Supreme Court and forcing a larger tax burden on everyday citizens to fund elitist education. You know, I kind of wonder. I always talk about him being the front boss and Dopey Joe and the Dopey Nostra and Barack's really pulling the strings and Soros and whatnot. I wonder if Dopey Joe isn't pulling a Vincent the Chin Gigante. For those that don't know who he is, he was a long time, he was a hitter originally, just a hit guy in the Genovese family. In fact, when Frank Costello was the head of that family, the boss, remember Charlie Luciano was the former of the commission. Charlie Luciano was deported, et cetera. Vito Genovese was thought to be the next boss, but he fled in a murder charge, a murder conspiracy. So Frank Costello took over and became boss. Well, Vincent the Chin Gigante was the hitman that attempted to kill Costello. It did not kill him. Bullet grazed him in the head, grazed his head. Costello just said, "I'm retiring." Right then, that's what he did. He didn't fight back. He just stepped down. I don't know why, but that's what he did. And so Vincent the Chin Gigante, eventually the Genovese family, was revealed that the Genovese family was run by a front boss and that the real boss was not revealed. That was discovered by a couple other families later on after it happened. But they figured it was easier that way. Let the front boss take some heat. But the real boss behind the scenes is kind of hidden. So Gigante walked around for years in Greenwich Village wearing a bathrobe and slippers and a hat, not shaving. And they finally got past that ghost and got him into court and eventually into prison, and he died in prison. But I wonder now sometimes if Dopey Joe, the trip. The bike certainly would argue against that. The airball handshakes don't necessarily argue against that. That could be him. But the wipeout on the sandbags, the wipeout on the bike, some other things, you kind of got to believe that he's not. But I just wonder sometimes if he is. Just sort of pulling a scam on us with faking some of this stuff. Going to backfire at some point, but an interesting piece of GOP presidential news, a PAC spokesman for the Ron DeSantis campaign all but said they know they are losing. But he also said, win or lose, that their campaign should make Trump better and sharper for the general election in 2024. To wit, from Great American News Desk, Steve Cortez, and I'm trying to think, it's Bob Cortez that I've met. But anyway, he said, right now in national polling, we are way behind. I'll be the first to admit that. I believe in being blunt and honest. It's an uphill battle, but clearly Donald Trump is the runaway front runner. He added that DeSantis' campaign was the clear underdog and added in the first four primary states, which matter tremendously. Polls are a lot tighter, but we are still clearly down. We're down double digits. We have work to do. He did find some reason for optimism in DeSantis' primary efforts, but not for DeSantis himself, predicting that the primary battle would make Trump a better and more competitive general election candidate. If we do not prevail, and I have every intent on winning, I didn't sign up for this to come in second, but if we do not prevail, I will tell you this, we will make President Trump better for having this kind of primary. Cortez also offered praise for Trump's skills on the debate stage, joking that it might help DeSantis if Trump carries through on his threat to boycott the first RNC-hosted debate next month. Is Ron the debater that Trump is? No, no, he isn't. Absolutely, Donald Trump is the maestro of it, right. No doubt about it, right. When he gets on the debate stage, you know, and on his feet, in front of a microphone, he debates like Jack Nicklaus played golf. There's no doubt about it. Well, except when it's rigged. And see, that's partly what DeSantis supporters fear, is that not so much that Trump divides us, because he doesn't divide conservatives for the most part. Yeah, there are some never-Trumpers, but he doesn't divide grassroots conservatives. He divides elitists. But no, he doesn't divide conservatives. But what they're afraid of, what a lot of DeSantis supporters are afraid of, is that Trump just can't win because they will do whatever it takes to make sure he doesn't win. And there's some real merit to that argument. I won't deny that. There is some merit to that argument. But I just, you know, it's like I said to people, I will vote for who I believe at the time is the best candidate. I got to believe that Donald Trump is still the best candidate. I'm not saying Ron DeSantis isn't a good candidate. I like Ron DeSantis. He's a great governor. That's partly why I don't want him to run. I want him to complete his term in Florida. Because I think if he stays through his term, which ends in 2026, or after the 2026 election, I think it strengthens the party's prospects to continue having a Republican governor. As that. Florida can't afford a Democrat governor. We really can't. I know the country can't afford a Democrat president, but it's really more what we can't afford is the freaks that have taken over with no resistance from media, no resistance from rhinos, you know, I mean, no resistance from elites of both parties. So no, I don't want Ron DeSantis to leave Florida early. That's my problem. But I like him as a guy. I think he's a good guy. I think he'd be a good president. Certainly better than the piece of crap we have in there now. Absolutely better than the piece of crap we have in there now. Oh my God. In sports, the USA Track and Field Championships take place starting tomorrow at Eugene, Oregon, Hayward Field. The championships run through Sunday. There's already controversy, although it's off the track. It seems like NBC holds the broadcast rights, is showing almost exclusively on cable and streaming as opposed to their terrestrial national network. Folks are speaking out. From awfulannouncing.com, what they seem to think, and Michael Johnson, who is a former world record holder in the 200 meters, but he and the 400 meters, he said it best. Now, this is first, by the way, this is the first time since 2006 that they won't be on NBC. Shikari Richardson, a great sprinter, sounded off. She says, these companies continue to make it harder for track and field to have exposure. All they want is to continue to exploit sports. Well, I don't know what she means by that, but Michael Johnson, 16-time gold medalist, also shared some harsh critiques. But he did put the onus on USA Track and Field for not making the event good enough to be good business for NBC. He said companies like NBC make decisions based on sound metrics for business success. Something is telling them and televising the USA Track and Field Championships on their terrestrial channels is not good for their business. All organizations have a responsibility to do what's best for their business. The IOC makes sure the Olympics remain good for NBC's business. USA Track and Field has not ensured that these championships are good for NBC's business, despite it being their responsibility to do so. Yeah, so it's going to be mainly Peacock or CNBC, maybe MSDNC. So that's okay, but the other thing is it's typically it's held in June, and with some windows this week year, with some other events going on the world sports stage, they gave a couple of weekends that World Athletics allowed for national championships to be held. And that was, the best one was July 8th or 9th. The other was July 29th and 30th. And that's not, you know, you can't really run a good team entry for the Worlds if you have people that are competing less than a month before. But the other thing, U.S. Women's Open. Golf. That's sad that that's getting more run, but, you know, whatever. So, yeah, that's happening. Some interesting events to watch out for. In the 100, Fred Curley and Christian Coleman and Noah Lyles. In the 200, Noah Lyles and Arianne Knighton. Watch the women's 100. Sha'Carri Richardson has run well, but so have several others. The 400 women's 400 hurdles, Sydney McLaughlin and Dalila Muhammad. McLaughlin, of course, is the world record holder. She's also running the 400 flat race. Men's shot put, Ryan Krauser. He's broken his world record again already this season. Be interesting to see what he puts out there. Definitely going to be interesting. Should be a good weekend for those that are into track and field, as I am. And we still have men running as men and women running as women. You know, we don't have yet. Finally, a bit about the new Florida law that became effective July 1st that allows permitless carrying. Now, first, as is typical, the moron patrol is out in full force. I would say that it's misinformation, but really what it is disinformation being passed on to the misinformed by big media and big left. So here's a few things. Number one, it does not allow just anyone to purchase a firearm willy-nilly, despite our Second Amendment. The usual background checks, both federal and state, as well as waiting periods on certain types of guns, et cetera, is still in effect. That didn't change. Despite big media and big left bloviating as if this is some newfound practice, it already exists in about 25 or 26 other states, depending on how you interpret their laws. So Florida's late to the game. Most importantly, criminals don't respect gun laws. But now, law-abiding citizens are on an equal playing field. No longer does an otherwise competent firearm owner need to take a class and get a permit to lawfully protect him or herself. Now, if you've never shot guns, I would urge you never to just go out and buy a gun and wield it. If you don't know how to shoot a gun, don't do it. Learn. You don't have to learn in a class, but learn from someone that you trust and someone you know is a capable and responsible firearm owner and user. This isn't moralizing or preaching. This is just simple common sense. If you've never driven and you want to buy a car, don't just go buy a car. If you want to become a chef but you've never learned how to cook, learn a few basics. Don't go out and buy a big green egg if you've never done smoked meats before. If you've never done a rack of ribs on a regular old smoker, don't go out and pay $800 for a big green egg or $1,500 for a big green egg, so you know what the hell you're doing. Even then, I wouldn't buy a big green egg, but that's just me. But no longer does an otherwise competent firearm owner need to take a class and get a permit to lawfully protect him or herself. Thank God. However, the best exchange may have come on Twitter in the form of the moronic Billy Baldwin, who is the brother to to Killer Alec, to wit. And I answered him. I did. I admit it. Billy Baldwin. Okay, here's his tweet. I picked up from somebody who answered it, but let me pick up his original tweet, and I'll tell you what others have said. Well, first, I'll say, so Freedom Cat retweeted it with this. She said, it's funny that nowhere in his timeline are any complaints about all the other 25 or 26 states that have this, puzzling. So Billy Baldwin, brother of Killer Alec, here's what he tweeted. Florida passes concealed carry law this week. It's like the Wild West down there now. Two questions. How soon before innocent people die as a result of this in some domestic, racial, road rage, or alcohol-related incident? How soon before a child, woman, or cop are struck down? Will the first incident occur at a 4th of July barbecue tomorrow? Two, how many American and Canadian tourists will no longer winter in Florida because they don't feel safe? How much tourism revenue will Florida lose due to DeSantis' new shootout at the OK Corral law? So here are some of the responses. Ultra MAGA Joyce Day. If you don't like it, stay in New York and do us all a favor. Lori Mills. Did you know the first thing you are supposed to do when picking up any gun is check the chamber? Might want to tell your brother. Someone else said, don't engage. If you were my follower, don't engage those that disagree. They've never lived in the country and wildlife is in danger, blah, blah. This person, Robert Hatton. The last thing Florida needs is another Baldwin lecturing us on guns. As long as the Baldwins aren't down here shooting, everything will be okay. Then it says, meme says, friends don't let Baldwins have guns. Unlike Alec Baldwin, Floridians know when their guns are loaded. Guns don't kill people. Stupid actors do. Welcome to Florida, where no Baldwin has ever accidentally shot and killed someone. Carson Crow said, I can see why you're concerned. I mean, if the camera crew on Rust had been able to conceal carry, your brother would likely be dead too. Dean Cain said, yes, that Dean Cain, most states now allow concealed carry. None are the Wild West, brother. Number one, innocent people already die every day as a result of criminals not following gun laws. Concealed carry evens the playing field. Two, Florida will continue to be a highly sought-after vacation destination. Sonny Balaj, only an idiot disarms himself and expects criminals to do the same. Rob Saylor, didn't your brother just murder someone and get off with a slap on the wrist? Yep, I said murder. Know why? Because every law-abiding gun owner will tell you the same thing. If you hold the weapon, it's your responsibility to know what it's loaded with, where it's pointed, and where the bullet goes. No one else's. Someone else, yeah. I mean, when is the last time someone got shot in Chicago where they have strict laws? Oh, yeah, never mind. Spitfire said, you and Alec have zero self-awareness. Another, guns don't kill people. Alec Baldwin kills people. And then this is the best one. This is the best one. This is the second best one. COVID-19, it's a meme with Alec Baldwin. It says, COVID-19 is like filming a movie with Alec Baldwin. You have a 97.6% chance of survival. God. How many concealed carry firearms owners have committed mass shootings with those concealed firearms? The answer is zero. You're an intellectually lazy clown. But here's the best one from Carlin Borzenko. Just says this. Maybe sit this one out. That's just perfect. Maybe sit this one out. Because it's absolutely just perfectly stated. Maybe just sit this one out. Now, here's another one he said. The Baldwins hate women. You do you. Oh, I got something to say about that. I told my wife this the other day, and she said I could use it. My wife will often say, you do you. And I finally had the guts to tell her, honey, that's the most bullshit line you can give someone. No man, I'm telling all men this, if your wife ever says, you do you, Let me tell you something. Very last thing you should do is, quote unquote, you. Don't do it. If your wife says, oh, whatever, you do you, don't do it. That is the worst thing. It's the stupidest thing you could do. Do not do it. If your wife says you do you, not do it. Listen to the clue. It's a definite clue. It's not saying you do you. What it means is you're pissing me off. Another internet laugh. It's not an internet laughy. It's a text laughy. This is one my daughter sent me last week. And she says she made it up. I believe it. Says, you know how Bruce became Caitlin? He's transgender. That's good. That was good. My daughter learned from me. She learned well from me. She really did. Love her and the wife. They're just wonderful. I married way up. I'm just saying. I married way, 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 way up. So there's that. So we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to finish off. I'm going to talk about my great guitarists who are no longer here, the guitarists of Fleetwood Mac. But let's play one I played last week for our break music. I'll be back in about 3 minutes.
I got a black magic woman. Got a black magic woman. Yes, I got a black magic woman. Got me so blind I can't see. Ooh, but she's a black magic woman, and she's trying to make a devil out of me. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Yes, don't turn your back on me, baby. You're messing around with your tricks. Don't turn your back on me, baby, cause you might just break up my magic.
We are back. I am Hank Jones, and you're listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports. That was Black Magic Woman, the Fleetwood Mac version. Yes, Peter Green wrote that song, their first guitarist, their early guitarist, their founder, actually. Yeah, he actually performed it with Santana at the 1998 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction because they were both inducted that year. Again, want to thank Duck Northwest Media and Joseph Gibson for being in the chat room. Duck made a comment. He said, China Phillips. I assume he was talking about her. She's married to Billy Baldwin, I guess. Am I right on that one, Duck? I believe that's the case. And although the Baldwin family sucks, yeah, China Phillips is pretty hot. I got to admit that. At least she used to be. Probably gone downhill since being married to him. So we're going to conclude. Like I said, I had a short show today because I've got to pick the wife up at the airport and whatnot, but going to conclude, or not conclude, but continue just a short version of the Great Guitarists Who Are No Longer Here series. We're talking about Peter Green, Danny Kirwan, Bob Weston, and Bob Welch from Fleetwood Mac, early guitarists of Fleetwood Mac before Lindsey Buckingham ever made the scene, before Lindsey Buckingham ever got fired. Some great guitarists, and they were really more a blues-oriented band in their earlier days. So this first song, you probably recognize, but you don't recognize it from Fleetwood Mac. You recognize it from Bob Welch's solo album, French Kiss. This is from the Bare Trees album. It's Bob Welch on vocals, and the guitars are Danny Kirwan and Bob Welch. Interestingly, when Welch redid it on his album, he did it with backing vocals from Christine McVie and Lindsey Buckingham, among others. And so it's kind of interesting. It's some good guitar work, and this is Sentimental Lady.
Yes, and all of the things that I said that I wanted.
that was Sentimental Lady. Now, but different from Welch's version, which is shorter, Welch eliminates one verse and does not sing the first verse a second time. So he sings the first verse, goes into an interlude, and then concludes it with the chorus. So it was a shorter version. I'm not sure why he did that, but whatever. I guess they probably figured it was better for, you know, radio airplay. Because we're stupid humans and we don't have long attention spans or whatever. I don't know. This next one is kind of a really nice guitar work. It's Welch and Kerwin working over each other, mainly Kerwin, of course. And they're handling, both of them handling the vocals. I believe that Welch is singing sort of a harmonic background vocal, and Kerwin's handling the lead vocal. It's the title cut from their song, from their Bear Trees album. This is called Bear Trees. It's a great song. Give it a listen. We'll be right back. So that was Bear Trees. I told a friend a long time, we were talking about that album, and I said, you know, that was Danny Kirwan at his Peter Green inspired best. I mean, it was a great album, and Danny Kirwan just absolutely shines on it because Green is gone, of course. And it's hard for multiple guitarists in groups. Sometimes it works out. I mean, it worked out for a long time for groups like the Allman Brothers, although, you know, once Dwayne got killed, it was never the same. But then he will be featured later in this series, no doubt. But, you know, the Beatles eventually broke up. But, you know, they did so much in a short time that it's hard to sit there and say that it was a guitar problem, because it wasn't. It was a band problem eventually. But, yeah, multiple guitarists in groups often don't get on well. But I think, you know, in their limited time of working with each other over their spans, the various guitarists from Fleetwood Mac did work well together. But Bear Trees was definitely a Danny Kirwan album, no doubt. So this next song is the last one I'm going to play. It's a beautiful instrumental that he did. Peter Green was very good at writing and producing instrumentals. Danny Green was inspired, obviously, or Danny Kirwan was obviously inspired by it. This song is called The Sunny Side of Heaven, and it's an absolutely beautiful instrumental. Give it a listen. Song there from Danny Kirwan and Fleetwood Mac with Bob Welch assisting. Great stuff. You know, I get through emails and stuff, and I look on Twitter. Joe Gibson said something a couple weeks ago saying, basically, look, conservative radio hosts have to stick together, have got to unite. We can't keep you know, keep doing it on our own and not having support of each other, et cetera. And, you know, I'll tell you something that really makes sense about that. It's not just that, you know, that the United Front is stronger, but, okay, I've talked about other hosts on Blog Talk Radio, Joseph Gibson being one. He goes Tuesday and Thursdays from what I can see when I'm looking through everything, but mainly Tuesday nights. And Restoring the Republic, and he has different themes. And 7 o'clock is what he, you know, on Tuesday nights. Give that a listen. And listen to the others. Listen to Vito and Al. Listen to Tim Tapp, who does a great show. Listen to Sally for American Statesman. It really is important to listen and, you know, to understand that, one, that it's not a competition. We want everyone to do well. It's sort of like guys that go out, you know, college guys would go out together. They want every guy to hit on a girl and get laid, so to speak. Sorry to sound crude, but that's, you know, we want them all to do well. But there's the other side of it. So I've talked about Brother Warren before, and he's a nice enough guy. I don't wish him any ill will, but, you know, he puts out some of this stuff, and when he calls it on shows, he gets into, you know. So his last show that I just got a thing on, Systemic Racism 101, A Course for White Conservatives, and in parentheses it says racists. So it says, Professor Brother Warren will conduct a class on systemic racism for white conservatives. If you are eligible to enroll in this class, please do so. It is free. Books and other reference materials will be mentioned during the class. Please have your notebooks, pens, pencils, and laptops handy to take rolls, to take notes. Okay, first of all, the insane idea we're all racist because we're white conservatives is just that. It's an insane idea. Conservatives are the very original people that got rid of slavery. Conservatives are about freedom. Conservatives are about color. Conservatives aren't about money and success and elitism. Conservatives are about freedom. Conservatives are about being free to run your own business, or go to whatever church, be able to protect yourself, go hunting, use our land. You know, land is getting to the point where the state takes it. What developers don't take, the state takes and closes down access. But so, you know, when I talk about, I won't talk about him anymore. I won't dignify. I won't, because this is just insane. Systemic Racism 101, A Course for White Conservative Racists. The fact that he keeps doing stuff on racism and racists, what does that tell you? It tells you he's obsessed with it. I'm not. No conservative that I know is. So that's one thing that needs to stop. Maybe that's one area where conservative hosts can get together and say, let's stop these clowns and their race baiting and their victimhood from permeating people's brains. So I said my piece. I got to get going. Like I said, got to pick the wife up at the airport. I want to thank Duck and Joe Gibson for being in. A couple of listeners on phones, thanks for being here. Even though I didn't put out a tweet or anything, I thank you for getting here. I just didn't want to put pressure on all that kind of stuff. But stay the course. But more than that, increase the pace. We've got to fight back. We wait around often for the Supreme Court to strike something down. But more often than not, they disappoint us. And even when they do strike something down, God, the big left never gives up anyway. So we've got to increase the pace, and we've got to stay the course. In the meantime, folks, I hope you all had a great Independence Day. Have a great rest of your week and a great weekend this weekend. It's summer. Get out and have fun. And be safe, and to success for all of you. Success to all of you. Good health to all of you. And a good time to all of you. Have a good night, folks. God bless. We will see you next week.